Hello, fellow watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast with your hosts, Andrew and my good friend Everett. Here, we talk about watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
Just crushing it. No, I'm good. I was trying to come up with, I have nothing to report. I'm doing great. I'm doing well. Baseball season. Did I already talk about this?
You've talked about it a couple times.
Oh, Mariners won their first game against the Yankees last night. And then I think they lost tonight. But we're just going to talk about the Mariners beating the Yankees.
Yeah, that's what's important.
That is what's important.
Because sports in the spring are in full swing. Winter sports are winding down. You may listen to this in March, but likely you're going to hear this in April. Yeah. I got home from a practice and shoved some food in my face and finished up the little odds and ends that need to happen before we can record. And I'm still wearing shoes. I don't know the last time I wore shoes when we recorded, and not slippers, to be clear. We've established that both of us are feet never nudes. But yeah, I don't know the last time I wore shoes.
Yeah, I mean, I wear shoes all the time because I have to come across the street.
But you also wear slippers about 50% of the time.
Maybe not quite 50, but yeah, more times than, yeah, often enough.
Yeah. Even in the wet.
It's a short walk.
It's a very short walk. Yeah.
It's a short walk.
It's most people's walk to their mailboxes from our front doors.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's right.
On our street, but just generally speaking, most people have to travel further to their mailbox than we do door to door.
Yeah, that's right. I think you're right.
It's super convenient.
Yeah, easy enough to do the math on that. But Andrew, how are you?
I'm good. I'm enjoying finally like my body not being shocked by the tree allergens. So I'm like actually feeling good and starting to enjoy this spring weather that we're intermittently enjoying. Kid activities, man. 4 nights a week. We are slam packed. And then starting this Saturday, we've got doubleheaders every Saturday for the next 6 weeks.
Lacrosse doubleheaders?
Yep.
How long does that take?
Well, it depends. A couple of our games are back to back, but some of them, one starts at 9 and one starts at 1.
Ooh, brutal.
So your entire day is...
How long is a lacrosse game?
An hour.
Yeah.
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 The back-to-back ones, I feel bad for the kids, but I prefer them.
Yeah, that's not... I mean, an hour's not bad. You know, the baseball game, the doubleheaders, you know, they're less strenuous for the kids. I think easier on the kids, but for the parents, it's like, get ready for the next 6 hours of your life.
That's why you can trust baseball dad's opinion on what folding chair to get. Because 80% of their life is spent in that chair.
I can make you a good recommendation. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. No, and I do feel bad for the kids for lacrosse doubleheaders, and especially this age group. So this is the first year he's going to play on a 120-yard field. Mm-hmm. So nine field players and a goalie per team. And lacrosse, very much like soccer, is played almost entirely in transition.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you, is it like line change like hockey, or is it like substitution like soccer?
It's line changes like hockey that have to be learned, right? Because hockey line changes are an art, right? Mm-hmm, like when to sub, and you know, it's incumbent on the player who's like making these decisions kind of on the move, like, well, no, we're on defense, so I don't care. It doesn't matter if you're tired, like sorry, run more. So we'll see, you know, fifth and sixth graders are still, you can like the kids who really are standout players are not just like athletic kids, but they're smart kids, right? Mm-hmm. They're the kids who can look at and understand the field. Like they have a high sport IQ for the game. And those are really the kids that kind of pull away in this age. And then that gap kind of closes because, you know, as kids get older, everyone starts to understand the concepts of the game. But it's going to be interesting. These kids are wiped at the end of practice. Like, I mean, you know, Mark, he's happy-go-lucky and chipper all the time.
He's dead after practice.
Oh, he's like dragging his bag and like one leg. You'd think he just came home from the trenches of Flanders when he gets home from lacrosse practice. I'm like, dude, it's 75 minutes. You're okay.
You're going to be all right. Yeah.
It's just 75 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's no. It's a fun time. You know, it's right about now, fifth and sixth grade, where they really start to, you know, grasp the sport beyond where's the ball, right? You know, fourth grade, you know, those elementary school kids really do a lot of ball watching, and they get into middle school and they start to conceptualize, you know, strategy beyond beyond that.
So, off ball movement. Yeah. When I coached soccer this last season, that was my entire thing, was off ball movement. If you had the ball, you couldn't move.
Yeah.
And if you lost it, like, that's on you.
We were working with a baseball practice tonight. We're working with the kids on like base running scenarios, right? So infielders running baseball, base running scenarios, right? So you got a guy first and third. What's the play
from everyone runs home?
Yeah. Well,
direct route.
They're, you know, thinking about like, okay, well, if I throw to second base to get the guy stealing second, that leaves third open. But these kids are still doing that a lot at this age. A guy steals first, that catcher pops up and throws to second,
and eats the steal from third.
That's right. You know, it's like 130 feet, right, to make that throw. Though it's this huge throw,
which and isn't so, even easy as an adult.
That's right. No, it's a hard throw, and so there, you know, inevitably, what happens is the guy from third just waits for the throw, and then he's popped at home.
And he's home before the ball has even made it to second.
You know, so showing him, hey, if you pop up and you throw the ball, look like you're, you know, signal you're going to throw to second, and then instead throw to the pitcher, all of a sudden we've got options. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess the point is just, it's cool to see, like, they're at that age now where you can...
Layering in tactics.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Like, we're no longer just catch, throw, hit. We're, like, actually playing baseball, and it's fun. I'm having so much fun with it. So, but in any event, we're not here to talk about lacrosse or baseball. Rather, we're here to talk about watches, wrist watches, those things that you wear on your wrist or perhaps in your pocket. Rarely. Andrew, do you want to lead us off?
Oh, you're such a gentleman
as ever
that you would let me lead it off with a show that you sent me all the same links I sent you.
I didn't even look at your links.
That makes sense. I want to start with Tissot. So Tissot has sized down the Gentleman collection to 38 millimeters. And I got to say, just top down right on this, this is very much Tissot, but this fills a gap that was left by the Sarb in a... like not one-to-one way, but really, really close. This is a high polished, thin outer bezel. It doesn't have that same sexy Sarb step, but this price range, right? We're looking at where's the 695 Swiss francs. So under $1,000, this zone has been missing, I think, a dress sport watch as refined as the Sarb since the Sarb's demise, right? There's a few things out there that kind of fit the bill, but not quite the same way the Gentleman does, now sized down to a 38. I think I would prefer it as a 36, but 38 is an excellent alternative, step in the right direction, perhaps. So what we have is a 38 millimeter case, 11.53 height, 100 meters of water resistance, the Powermatic 80 movement. This is the natural successor, I think, now to the Sarb, which I think this our affordable space has been missing, right? Like a large production, well-manufactured dress sport watch. You know, what else is there?
You know, I'm struggling to come up with something. I don't think Sarb at all when I see this, but I can understand why you do. It didn't come to my mind, and looking at it, I'm like, yeah, sure, that makes a lot of sense. But certainly didn't pop into my mind.
That's right where I went when I saw it.
Yeah. No, I mean,
size the way it is, at least.
I do think that there are
other watches that fit this bill, but this is great. I was going to just point out that here we are having talked about Tissot twice in 2 weeks.
That's not unusual.
I think it is. I mean,
Tissot kind of, they lulled at the end of last year, but early last year, I think Tissot does the bulk of their push ahead of all the watch shows. Like, I think the first quarter of the year, we see the most Tissot releases. I could be wrong. Fact check me if you will, and I don't care. That's when I feel like we talk about Tissot the most, is early in the year.
Yeah.
Because this isn't PRX. This is like a modern, there's nothing about this that screams vintage inspired, right? This is just a modern dress sport watch that's affordable, that's well spec'd. And I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and at, you know, 37 by 12, I think if I remember right, the SARB is just a hair under 12, but I mean, it's right there, you know. Yeah. Dimensionally, I think it's a super similar, certainly a more boring case, but that's not bad, especially for a watch like this, right?
Yeah, I think the SARB was kind of in a league of its own and remains so, and will kind of always be like this, you know, flash in the pan of really, really refined, elegant watchmaking at a super affordable price, right? It happens a lot, right? But the SARB was kind of in a league of its own.
For what it's worth, I do think you can still get a Seiko SARB for...
They're $800.
Yeah. But you know, this is a pretty reasonable alternative.
Chrono 24 right now, they are just my quick Google list. They're sitting $1,000 right now. Shit, I need to sell my SARB.
Yeah, I mean, 630.
Mine's in pretty good shape. Mine's not in like new shape, but it's in, I'd say, used very good.
I think if you pay attention, you could probably get one of these for under 500 used, obviously. But just on the Tissot, I think this is a really good looking option. I like the end link, even though it's a male end link. I thought they did just a great job with this all around. It's, you know, in some ways, we talked about that Visidate last week. In some ways, I think that this is the Ernie to the Visidate Burt, you know, really two very similar watches, but doing the similar or same or similar thing in two really different ways. I like this release a lot. And you know, it's not anything different than the 40. In fact, I want to say, but
it's sized better, right? A 40 millimeter gentleman is a 42 millimeter Bambino. Give us the right size, right?
Yeah.
Four dial colors on this: silver, black, blue, or green. I mean, the silver's definitely silver. It's not crispy Arctic white, mm-mm, but it's pretty light silver.
Yeah. Of these, the only color I think I'd wear is the black.
Blue. Oh.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't rock it. The green, I would definitely wouldn't rock the silver. The blue's nice. It's not a bad blue, but
it's not Tudor blue, but it's I like that blue.
It's not quite petrol, but it's got sort of that
your fucking blue
gunmetal-y thing going on.
Pantone 6421 blue.
Yeah, I think you're actually, like, for someone who talks about watches, your watch vocabulary is embarrassingly low, but
perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah.
My vocabulary of blue is
you're on a thing where you bring it up every week and I'm like, Andrew, we talk about watches, you could maybe come up with other words.
Blue is blue to me. Maybe I'm colorblind.
Yeah, or just stupid. One of the two.
Perhaps. We'll flip a coin.
Amida.
Oh, yes.
Amida released a watch this week, which is very similar to a watch they released last year, but it's just
ungroup
interesting enough that I thought we'd talk about it. So this is the Amida Digitrend. So I think the Digitrend was released in, I want to say, 2025.
Oh, I thought it was before that.
You know, it might
2024.
Okay.
Revival debut in 2024. Because there was that big push. There was like five of these watches released. These horizontal view
yeah, yeah.
digitals.
And so this is the same as that. It's a, you know, a roughly 39 by 39 millimeters stainless steel monocoque case, which sits on top of your wrist and is meant to be viewed from the side. So we've got a, we've it's a side view, right? Similar to the Casquette from Gerard Perregaux or whatever, right?
The dozen that got, that came out in the last 3 years.
They've released this now in a NASA edition, limited to 100 pieces, and it's really cool, right? It's got sort of like a space shuttle thing going on with a prominent NASA, what do we call it, worm logo at, well, on the top. I was going to say at 6 o'clock or at 4:30, but it's not. It's on the top.
The case top.
That's right.
The cover, perhaps.
And, you know, it comes with a bunch of cool shit. We've got like a Kennedy Space Center patch. And
it's like a quilted hook and loop backed strap on this thing. It's kind of bizarre, but like sort of fits.
Yeah, textile on rubber on the strap. It sort of gives you like some EVA suit.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking quilting. like the inside of like a bulkhead, right? It's like that, sure, that little
quilting. Yeah,
yeah. When you bonk your nugget, it's not like onto the aluminum foil thin hull. It's onto some kind of padding.
The white portions are, so it's stainless steel. The white portions are polished white ceramic.
Oh, cool.
Which actually, the worm logo is a shuttle era logo. And the shuttle used a polished ceramic heat shield. So there's a bit of like, there's some Easter eggs here. This thing's pretty cool, man. I mean, it's an expensive watch, right? So these things come in at, I think, 3,400 Swiss francs. Only 100 of these available.
What's the non-NASA? Isn't that much off of this price point, though?
Yeah, no. I mean, this isn't a ton more expensive. It is a base caliber Soprad Newton, the P092, and they've got the jumping hour module is developed in-house and added on top. Dimensions, we could talk about dimensions. I don't really think that's super meaningful. But it's not small, right? 39 by 39 by 15.6 thick, 50 meters of water resistance. 15.6
thick, otherwise you can't read it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's why I said dimensions are kind of...
The legibility comes entirely from 15.6.
Online orders opened yesterday. I believe there are still some of these left. So scheduled delivery in May, $4,420 American dollars if you go to the website. As of the time of recording, which is probably about 10 hours, maybe 8 hours before the time this will publish. Well, we'll actually publish tonight.
Depending
on when you hear this, I think there may be some of these left if you're really into it. And I mean, this might be something that you just take a flyer. This is cool. It's an expensive watch.
Horizontal reed watch design, I'm surprised, never really gained any traction for stick pilots.
What do you mean?
Like stick and yoke. Imagine you're flying on like aviation controls.
Mm-hmm.
Where's your watch?
Mm-hmm.
Facing away from you. But this horizontal reed, when you're controlling your yoke, whether it be a yoke or a stick air platform, you're looking at your wrist. You know, not like a motorcycle.
Yeah,
when you're angled and you can see it, not like, you know, that angle of viewing time on your watch, I'm surprised has never gained any traction from like auto sports or aviation.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just a quick glance down to view your instrument, which a watch in this environment is an instrument. Ergonomically it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, there's some pragmatic reality to that, to what you're saying. Yeah,
it just never, because it's weird.
It is weird. I mean, I think that that's, you sort of hit the nail on the head. I think that's really all you have to say about it. It's weird. But cool. Undoubtedly cool.
You want to know something else weird?
Tell me.
Doxa Sub 200 number 2 collection. That's weird. It's weird for... So the 200 came out... a long time ago, but in 2019 it was revived and was met with some kind of mixed reviews because it's a round case. It isn't the Doxa case that you think about, but the size was amazing and then people loved it. So the mixed reviews were like, oh, it's not Doxa, but it's also sized really great and I love it. The new Doxa 200 sub 202 comes with 5 new colorways and they've beefed up the size. So if you weren't a fan of the 38 millimeter case that was released, it is now available in a 44. Was it a 38 or a 40? It doesn't matter. It's now available in a 44 with a 48 lug to lug, 12.8 thick. It still has an SW200 movement. It 200 meters water resistance, and the same price, right? It's still $1,700 on rubber, $1,750 on a bracelet. It's a weird, like I don't understand the why grow the watch, right? They have, it almost is like they're releasing a competitor for their up market watches.
You know, I don't
increasing the size.
I don't think it's as small as you're recalling. I want to say
the 200 is it. That was like what got people excited. Is it a 40 or a 38?
No, I want to say it's 42.
Is it really
43? Yeah. Hang on. I don't think. I think your recollection is that it was small. 42 on the
42. Oh, I thought it was smaller. Either way, this is now a big, no bullshit round dive watch from Doxa that I think is,
you know, I think because of the way they proportion this, so
it one, looks great.
I have the liar lugs. Mm-hmm. I actually think that this isn't going to wear all that bigger. Also, we've gone from 14 millimeters to 12.8. I think this thing's going to wear better than the original sub 200. That's my,
it may very well.
That's my take on this.
Cause the 750 wore like a dream and was like wearing a manhole cover in size, but it wore like an absolute dream.
I think this is actually a really great update.
Well, it's not an update. It's an iteration. Like it's an also two.
So these are both of them.
They're going to keep the 42 millimeter and they've now introduced it in 44. Right now they've got 4 colorways, the Red Coral, Shark Hunter Vintage, Shark Hunter Caribbean and Sea Emerald. But I think we can reasonably expect that in the next 6 months, we're going to see about a dozen color releases for the sub 202, to match the entire lineup, right? This is kind of a Doxa thing to do. Like, hey, we have this new watch in 3 colors and then, or in a limited edition. And then the actual platform gets unrolled with the typical dozen Doxa colors. I just think it's interesting for the 200, which was meant to be kind of a lighter tending towards a skin diver for Doxa, to then size it up to match the size of the 300T, and not quite the 750, but still like to size it up and match that. I think it's an interesting size iteration that we talk about, we want brands to do, right? Release the watch, give it to us in 3 sizes, and they're all going to sell out. Because then everyone gets what they want.
Yeah. Thus far, my only objection to this is that at this point, I don't see any indication that they're going to release this with a beads of rice.
No, it's the mesh.
Yeah. So, you know, I think we've yet to...
I think in the next 6 months, we'll see this on a beads of rice with the 12 normal, however many colors it is. I think it's 12.
I really like the size update on this. I think this makes this a more, for my part, a more interesting
The thickness update for sure. The thin or the thinness. Got it on that Jenny Craig and
yeah, I like it. Nomos, just quietly doing Nomos things, which I know a lot of people don't. People have said to me recently, more than one person has said to me, I've never got Nomos. And I'm like, there's nothing to get. It's a watch, you idiot. But I think I understand what they mean, right? Nomos is just weird. They're different. The way they do releases is different. They're like this bizarre sort of and like affordable and yet in-house and like
they're kind of a middle finger, but in the most polite way. Like from Nana. Like getting the middle finger from Nana.
Right. They've released just they were just like, oh, here's two new versions of the Club Campus in both sizes.
don't mind us.
We're like, hey, well, you guys, if you're interested, we've got a full olive and then what they're calling full rose and all olive, which I just think these are both terrific.
The all olive in the small is that has my number.
Yeah. You know, these two were really small. So with long lugs, it's kind of an interesting. Club Campus is a weird. I used to like be really into it and thought that's what I want. And then I tried on a 38 and I was like, oh, I think it's not going to work for everybody. Yeah, that's confirmation. The Yankees lost or the Yankees won the second game in the Mariners series. I know everybody at home has been waiting for my update on that.
Pins and needles. They paid for the whole seat, but they only needed the edge. So now sit back, get comfortable, and we'll keep talking about watches.
But in terms of colors, man, the full rose is like this dusty pink that's got like a little bit of like mauve.
It looks tan purple. Your boots after you spent the day walking through cinder block,
right?
Like a freshly cindered road that dried out. It looks like that.
And of course, California Dials on these being a Club Campus, small seconds. I think these are great. If you are not a Neanderthal and you like thin watches, Nomos has your back. These are both 8.1 and 8, or these are 8.1 and 8.4 millimeters thick, respectively, like all Club Campuses, right? Very, very thin, super wearable on that Z dimension. Those lugs might get you though. They get some people because it's a very flat watch.
Yeah, they're super flat. I get the sense that if it were any bigger, it would be like Speedmaster hang over the edge.
Yep.
Long.
Yep. You are getting in-house manual wind movement, 100 meters of water resistance. The sort of in-house they're swing system escapement. I mean, really a compelling brand.
And if you care, it's a vegan velour strap.
$1,890 for the small one, $2,070 for the big one. Yeah, you can get sapphire case back for an additional $300. So it's a pretty movement. So
a sapphire?
Sapphire.
Never heard you make that noise before.
These are really really terrific.
The all olive is the first time I think that I've seen a Nomos and gotten like, it is phenomenal because it's an interesting contrast, right? It's a really like OD, like ammo can olive green, on this really modern design. Like there's a contrast there between that color, at least the way my brain sees that color, and a California Dial with small seconds, high polish.
You know, I'm just noticing something. Aren't the Roman numerals normally on top in a California Dial? So this has 10, 12, and 2 in Arabic, and then 4 and 8 in... Isn't a California dial normally Roman numerals on top? I think
California is just 50-50. But maybe we can call this a Washington dial if it is, in fact, opposite of what a typical California is. But I think that feels right. Like, as you're saying it now, it didn't occur to me, but I do think that typically I see 6 and 8.
Yeah, you know, I've just never, this has never occurred to me before, but it's like an upside down California.
What's that effect? What's that called where you like see the thing or think of the thing that's actually wrong?
I don't know.
When everyone like misquotes the movie because it's been so misquoted.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about.
It's some kind of, it's an effect thing where, I want to say it's like Nielsen, but it's not. One small step for man and one giant leap for mankind is in fact not what was said, but it's so repeated.
Right, or that's Luke, I am your father.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Interesting.
How about we talk about the new Baltic colors?
Or just
the new Baltic watch?
Yeah,
but I want to talk about the colors. So
of the new watch?
Can we do it one step at a time, please? So Baltic is often like kind of somewhere between either on the cutting edge or like right on the bleeding trail. Like they're either first to it or last to it, I feel like, with Baltic. So they have now introduced a new model. I was kind of hoping that you were going to talk about this one, but I want to talk about the watch itself. You want to take a swing at that name? Hors de Monde, maybe?
Yeah, Hors de Monde.
Okay. It is a 37 millimeter, 11.3 with the crystal, 9.3 without. And I'm kind of annoyed that we've made such a big deal as watch enthusiasts that an 11.3 GMT is unacceptable to us, but like they have to qualify it with, but without this box crystal, it's only 9.3, which is baller. In 100 meters of water resistance, Soprod C125 GMT movement, 42 hours of power reserve with 4 hertz. Not chronometer, $1,300. So now let's get into it. We have three amazing stone colorways. We have
stone dials. They're stone dials,
right? Stone dials, yeah. Stone colorways. We have three great colors. The Sodalite in blue, Labradorite in gray blue, and Tiger's Eye. These are absolutely killer. Independent of the fact that Baltic makes a really, really fantastic GMT. The design on this is great. We have a really traditional world timer bezel on this that's, excuse me, double stacked thick. So it's a thick, thick bezel. Internal 24-hour track. And then the stone dials that are like, I bitched in the last month that I'm over stone dials. And it's like Baltic heard me and they're like, don't worry, man. We got you. And they dropped three gorgeous iterations of stone dials on this World Timer GMT. So this, the blue is the most boring because it's just gorgeous. The Labradorite, which I assume is a meteorite found in Labrador.
Can you give me just about 15 seconds?
No.
Yeah, give me 15 seconds. So this is great. I know nothing about minerals. Let's just start there. Labradorite is a plagioclase feldspar mineral, famous for Labrador essence. It's from the crystal system triclinic.
It's not a meteorite. Why would they call it ite?
And it's primarily found in mafic igneous rocks such as basalt, gabbro, and anorthosite.
We have enough trouble with words. Why would they do this?
I just wanted to say all those words that I have no clue what they mean. That's all I wanted to do. I was just reading about this and I was like, who the fuck wrote this, first of all? Second of all,
why is it not a meteorite if it ends with ite?
I don't know, buddy.
I don't accept it. It's a meteorite in my head. It's not. It's stone. I accept this now. I don't like it. It is gorgeous. It's like cutting into like aged, thick, hard packed ice. Mm-hmm. There's great tones of black and blue and white that cut through it. And it is absolutely gorgeous. The tiger's eye is a tiger's eye. We've all seen that. It's this really lovely orange and yellow, kind of sandy, beautiful colorway. But this labradorite that grows in basalt, does it grow? It's a crystal then. I mean, like, I don't fucking know.
I think it's igneous. So no, I don't think it grows.
You made that word up.
I think this
comes on an Italian calf leather strap, beads of rice, or a steel flat link. These Baltic is just knocking it out of the park on this release.
Yeah. So this is actually, there's more going on here than meets the eye. Or perhaps than meets the eye. This is a callback to the original World Timer styling, which is to say it's not just a bezel with city names on it. There's also an internal rotating disc. So what Baltic has done is taken the hour module or the date module, excuse me, and slipped in this disc along the outer ring of this dial that rotates.
Slipped into the DMs.
On a 24-hour cycle. So the idea is that you can, in theory, tell the local time via the two internal hands or the two central rotating hands. But at any given moment, you can also see what time it is anywhere in the city or anywhere in the world, right? So if you want to know what time it is in Istanbul, you just look at that outer ring and it'll tell you, por ejemplo, that it's, you know, 3 o'clock or whatever in
If it's set to
Constantinople
Istanbul time.
No.
That doesn't make sense.
No. The bezel and that rotating ring rotate separately. And so it's an ongoing, it's a constant.
No, that doesn't
expression
make sense
of time.
Brain. So you rotate your bezel to
no,
that
you don't
6
have
o'clock.
To touch your bezel. It all because the ring rotates on a 24-hour cycle, it always tells you what the time is in those places.
Against what?
It doesn't matter, right? Because it rotates. It rotates, right? So right, you know, so look at
no,
this. Look
that,
at the picture.
Not
look
compute.
At look at the lead picture.
No, I see it. I understand because we have a sun and a moon marker on that internal rotating bezel. We have a 6 o'clock arrow.
And that rotates on a 24-hour cycle. So in that lead picture at Samoa, it's 10 o'clock. And in an hour, it'll say Samoa 11 o'clock. And in the next hour, Samoa sun for noon. Right? It moves. So at any given time, you can tell what time it is in Paris, 2200, or Samoa, 1000. And then the next hour, it'll have moved to tell you what time it is now.
I don't understand it.
It's actually a clock, Andrew.
No, I don't accept this.
Okay, well. So it dimensionally, this watch is...
But South Georgia is not the same time... What?
Andrew, you go around the dial.
I understand how words work. I'm struggling.
So, Tokyo, Buenos Aires,
right, no, I
on
get,
opposite
I,
sides.
I get this. Give me a minute to let this sink in.
Okay. This is a crazy watch. This is the original style for a World Timer watch. And we don't see this much now.
No.
And in fact, we see, you know, them come up at auction occasionally. This is an outrageously cool watch. Also, 100 meters of water resistance. Like, come on, Baltic. 37 millimeters by...
Bleeding edge.
Like you said. Well, I mean, very old style of watch. But
Who's doing it? Nobody else does this style. I know. GMT.
This thing's rad, dude. This is a really, really cool watch. 200 pieces per rock.
Stone.
Individually numbered. This is a fantastic watch.
And they're super thin.
And looking at the comments on Hodinkee, I like Baltic, but this one does not do much for me. Hands are too short. No second hand. Something just feels... Shut up. God, I hate comments. I should never look.
No seconds, no date. Miss. This is the guy who gets no second dates.
Got it. Oh. Yeah, this is gorgeous.
That was a good burn. I feel good about that.
Really? Oh, also... Lume everywhere.
Oh, a little too thick for the size. Yeah, the amount of lume on this thing. There's more BGW9 than there is stone.
Bezel lume, 24-hour ring loomed, 12 hours are loomed, the hands are loomed. It's
just concentric lume rings.
Baltic, well...
Nailed it.
Well done.
Nailed it.
Yeah, this is crazy good.
I always check the time at about now because I'm like, gosh, we are going to go way short. And every time I check it in about 42 minutes, I'm like, oh, we should consider picking up the pace. That was mine. So it's your choice next.
That was yours? I think that one was mine.
No, because you talked about the Nomos because that's not a watch that I would talk about. I actually cut it from my list knowing that you would talk about it.
So we've had some updates this week to watches that we know and perhaps love from the past. I'm going to talk about the one I like. Andrew, I'm going to look to see if the one I don't like is on your list. It's not. Interesting. Okay. Oh, no, it is. There it is. So the one I like is the Longines updated Hydro Conquest. Hydro Conquest, I think, is a underrated watch.
It's slept on.
Slept on watch. Maybe not underrated, but certainly slept on. Longines recently released this with a GMT complication that was very cool, but a pretty big watch. They've just revamped this. And... I think that they are really trying to make a statement with this. Longines, we've discussed Longines a number of times over the last couple of years. It seems to me that Longines has really, like, at some point in the last, you know, say 5 years, Longines decided, you know what? We're a serious watch company. Mm-hmm. And we're going to make serious watches. And... there's no reason that we can't be every bit as good as Tudor. And perhaps we can do what Tudor does and just be better.
And they've accepted the need to get with the modern watch design. So right? We've seen a lot of updating.
They released this new Hydro Conquest in both 42 and 39, which I think is nailed it. I think you did that exactly. That's, right. Yes. Case height is 11.7 for both of these. We've got sort of a more modernized dial instead of the weird sort of numerals. We've got a bezel that is good. We've got fonts that I'm not wild about, but that are very much Longines fonts. We've got an exclusive caliber with the L88.5, which is a 72-hour power reserve, great caliber, fantastic bracelet where they've put in a female end link that is exactly what it should be. We've got like sort of a denim blue, a black and royal blue bezel, a terrific green on green, obviously black on black. Is going to be where I head to. I just think this is a release that is going to not interest or not excite anybody. But at whatever these are, $2,200 to $2,400, I'm like, man, this is a really compelling watch. Does Tudor sell even a single watch besides, what's the big Tudor dive watch?
The Black Bay.
No, not the Black Bay. The big
Pelagos
one. Does Tudor does not sell a single watch besides the Pelagos that I find more interesting than this.
And I think that I, for me, so when I saw this, I was like, this is just a Hydro Conquest. Like,
but it's not.
No, because what really told the story for me was looking at the side-by-side evolution of this watch. And I was like, oh.
The old one's ugly. This one's not.
Yeah. But in my head, it still is. And then I look at the side-by-side. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's why it's just a Hydro Conquest. And you pull over to the new version, you're like, oh, this is what it should have been all along. Mm-hmm. They've pulled the date window all the way out to the minute track. Mm-hmm. They've changed the fonts. They've done some big color updates to make it an actually attractive watch. So, yes, it's boring. The crown guards are just like, they're slightly more aggressively curved. So they're shorter.
Oh, I like these crown guards so much.
Oh, they're so much better. The lugs are just ever so slightly just they've made this a svelte dive watch rather than kind of like a clunky, antiquated.
Ew.
The, like I don't afterthought
like the,
of a
I
watch.
I don't like the old one. I no, love this release.
I'm looking at this. If you view this watch independent of what you think of Longines and what you think of the Hydro Conquest, this is an entirely new platform. And I think it deserves a new name from Hydro Conquest because it's not. This is the new standard bearer for it. And I am here for it. This, you know, there are plenty of critiques to be made of like, oh, this is so, no, it's a baller dive watch that exists in the $2,000 to $3,000 category that is, it doesn't miss.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I really, really like this.
The colors are good. The fonts are good. Throw away everything you've thought about the Hydro Conquest and look at this through an entirely new
and the lens. Hydro Conquest has its fans. Important to note, a lot of people really love the old Hydro Conquest. I was not one of them. For the reasons we've already discussed, I love this watch.
39 and 42 as options is great. This is, I think for
I take me, this over a Black Bay any day of the week.
Yeah, and at 42.
Yeah.
I think I want this in a 42.
I think so too.
Steel mesh or an H-Link. I don't like H-Links.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think... I think, you know, maybe some Christopher Ward stuff that I like. I mean, this is really a very compelling... This is a very compelling... We've got Doxa. We've got maybe some Zen stuff that is kind of in there.
Yeah, the U50s are... They're a little bit more than this, aren't they? They're like in the 3,000-ish. Yeah,
they're a little bit more. We've got some Seiko stuff that's right at this level. But, I mean, frankly, I think that this is, you know, there's always going to, like, the Black Bay is an incredibly popular watch. No doubt about it. Very good watch. Popular.
And for a reason.
For a reason. That's right. It's a great watch. I like this better. I think that this is a much more compelling entry.
I think it's more interesting.
We got Oris Aquus. I think that the Aquus is about this price.
No, and I think the Ocean King is about this, and I like, and similar flavored.
Yeah, Aquus is right about there. I like this way better than the Aquus.
Yeah, and I don't know or hate anyone who has this watch.
What's next?
Next up for me, I'm surprised you didn't want to talk about this one. The Denison ALD.
No, that's not the one you need to talk about. Let's talk about the other new one that I hate.
Oh, no, I'm going to leave that one for you. You have another one on the list. So the Denison ALD Dual Time. This is a watch that we talked about, I don't know, 6 months ago. And
I think we talked about it right after.
Before. We talked about it right before because it was a watch that we were interested in seeing. I saw it in person. I got to say, I hate pictures of this watch. I do not like the way this watch shows up in digital media. In person, I'm for it. I liked it in person. And I have to assume that these new pictures, these new colorways, because so what we have is the ALD released in three new colorways, and they are calling them blue, brown, and green. Under $1,000. So they're 820 on the steel bracelet, 740 on the strap. These are great. They're 37 millimeter case, 35.6 lug to lug. They do feel big because they're squares, right? That's the way it is. They're 6.1 millimeters thin. We can't even call that thick at this point. This dual time functionality, was really, really cool in person. So the blue is a dark blue on the left and a light blue on the right. Brown, just the same. Green, just the same. The colors are good. This dual display is interesting. And I have to say, in pictures, I still don't like them. But I know, having seen them in person, that this like mocha brown is going to be hot fire. The blue is going to be really good because it's like, I might be colorblind. These blues look like almost identical to me. I don't really see much of a difference, unlike in the green and the brown. Oh no, in that picture, it doesn't matter. It does not matter. These are going to be really good. I like these new colorways. No, that's the same color blue. That's the same. Yeah. I'm broken. I accept. I like these new colorways, and I like this watch. And this is one of the few watches that I've most watches, you see it in person and you're like, oh, now I really get it. You're like, oh, it's a good looking watch in pictures. And then in person, you're just smitten. Mm-hmm. I hate this watch in pictures. And in person, I really, really dig it.
Yeah, I like it too. I mean, obviously, it's a watch whose reputation kind of precedes it, you know, GPHD winner and everything. Shamelessly a quartz watch, which in 2026 is not rare, but not super common. Really high levels of craftsmanship in terms of fit and finish. Beautiful case backs on these. It's just super interesting. It's hard to argue that this isn't an interesting watch. Double 1032, double 1032 movements.
And still at 6.1. Like it's
super thin quartz movements,
but it's a really intriguing watch.
Okay. Omega.
Oh, you're gonna do that? You're gonna leave the other one for me, huh?
Omega, very near and dear to me. My two favorite watches, without a doubt, that I own are Omega. It's pronounced Omega. I spend roughly, I don't know, 60% to 70% of the time wearing an Omega. I love the brand. I just love it. And yet, Omega has their head so far up their ass that they are, I think, at risk of becoming the Tag Heuer of 1998. Look.
They do so much weird stuff.
No, it's not weird. Omega has developed a very cool movement. And in 2006 or whatever, when the coaxial movement came out, or maybe I've got that date all wrong, I think it was very interesting. At this point, it's just like, sorry, Omega, nobody cares anymore. Release a cool watch. So they have the Omega Constellation, one of the most interesting historic watches possible.
This 1999 was when the coaxial movement was introduced.
Pie pan, dials, just gorgeous. A vintage Constellation is gorgeous. Small watches, but absolutely gorgeous. These angular cases. They've got this lug setup. They're called dogleg lugs, or they're called, referred to as dogleg lugs. They've re-released the Constellation, and I think that this is an opportunity to release a, let's say you don't want to be crazy, Omega. You're like, you know what, 38, fine. I'm okay with that. But 38 and you know, what are you going to do? You're going to do 11 Omega? Okay, I can deal with that. No. We're going to do damn near 40. We're going to re-release the Constellation in damn near 40 at 12.5 millimeters thick with a 47 millimeter. Just go away.
No, it's a why master, does this it's watch, a master chronometer.
Why does this watch need a coaxial?
They must have too many coaxial movements, and they're just finding ways to put it into things. So that's why I wanted to talk about this watch, because it is so disingenuous to the original Constellation. It doesn't make sense. It's going to make money. They're going to sell like hotcakes because people will take anything that Omega does and treat it as canon. And I don't know.
So these are like 11 to 12,000 in steel.
Yeah.
And
20.
You can get Sedna or Moonshine at 38,000 or Canopus Gold for 44,000 platinum. And gold is at 57.8.
And it's a two-hander. It's a master chronometer. This is like the first foray into this chronometer plus movement certification.
So dumb.
This is my
least favorite. I saw this and I was like, sick.
Gross.
Gross. This is such... I fucking hate this watch.
It doesn't make...
And I hate it. Sorry. When I say I hate it, the reason I hate it is because it's not at all what I wanted. I've thought about this watch before.
If they release this under any name, if they release this under a new SKU...
And also, $12,000 for a...
It's a master chronometer.
I don't get it, dude. I think Omega's totally lost the plot here.
Yeah.
I think they've totally lost the plot.
Yeah, they are treading in uncertain waters.
This is just absurd and dumb, and I hate it. What's next?
Well, so this wasn't on my list, so I didn't even read about it. But
oh, the 50?
The 50 with a restored Valjoux. I'm like, you get to do back-to-back.
Yeah, Millésime, chronograph, bicompacts from Raymond Weil. And...
what?
And the... Which they've done this before, right? But
it's not what we know Raymond Weil for.
The twist here is... that they are making 50 of these to celebrate their 50th anniversary. And these are all coming with a factory restored Valjoux 23.6 column wheel chronograph from 1976, which is like, yeah, okay, Raymond Weil.
I love everything about this watch.
Fantastic sector dial. It's stunning. Dimensions are unlike a few other brands. They were like, you know what? Let's release this in a way that makes sense. So it's 37 millimeters, 10.7 high, 18 karat gold white bezel. It's fucking perfect. This is perfect.
The first time I was reading the spec sheet on this, I was just kind of doing a glance through. And I didn't read piston style pushers. I read prison style pushers.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, why is it prison?
Yeah, that's interesting.
I kept reading it as prison. It took several like focused looks. Oh, piston. Different.
Of course, you know, being a restored movement, there's only 50 of these being made. And so they're going to be really tough to get. Price is 8,600 or 8,650 Swiss francs. So like $10,000, you know, or less than a new Constellation.
And better in every way.
Oh, God, this is so much better. If, yeah, I love this release. Obviously going to be very hard to get. I assume going to be very hard to get.
I can't imagine.
The dial on this thing is beautiful.
Any of us will know somebody who gets a hold of one of these.
Oh my gosh. I think this is such a fucking cool watch.
This is an awesome. This is one of my, if not my favorite anniversary release. Because it's so out of character in my head for Raymond Weil, but it fits and works perfectly.
You know, I read an article about this watch that said, you know, Raymond Weil didn't really capture the enthusiast market at all until 2023. And I was like, well, that's not fair. But then I was like, no, I think that's right.
Mm-hmm. It took him a minute, right? Like it was kind of like the way Jack Mason took some time to build up some momentum and then like get a read of the environment and the marketplace. And then once they did, they did.
Yeah, dude, they nailed it. What a cool release.
Yes. That movement is just, they just don't make them like they used to.
They sure don't. They sure don't. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah. I don't think there's much else to say. I think using restored or new old stock vintage movements is like one of the coolest things that a watch company can do.
I mean, it's risky.
It is, but you also know that you're taking a risk for a super limited run, right? If you're getting into 50 movements that can either be restored or are new old stock, you're going to sell them. You're not going to be sitting on 49 restored 7750s or new old stock 7750s or, you know, in this case, what are they? The RW 1976. You're just not.
Yeah.
It's the 23.6. It's the Raymond Weil 1976 because they restored them, but it's the Valjoux 23.6. Yeah. You're not going to sit on those.
Really cool. Really cool. Andrew, other things, what do you got?
Oh, so I made my first foray into molecular gastronomy this week. So we talked, I don't know, not too long ago about how my kids got super excited by Nick DiGiovanni and his food experiments. And there's this one episode that they like specifically ask for. It's a watermelon episode. And he does, I don't remember the number, 50, we'll call it, ways to eat a watermelon. And some of them are super dumb. It's like, here's a new watermelon cutter. The one that they have been, I don't feel like daily is an exaggeration, asking if they could do, was to make watermelon caviar. And so this last week I was at the grocery store and I was like, oh yeah, get watermelon. Oh, I also have to order something. So I got onto the Amazon and I ordered agar powder, which is a kelp-based thickening agent. It acts really similar to gelatin and really fast. Like there's not a, it cools at a much higher temperature and gelatinizes at a much higher temperature. So like we did half watermelon and I ruined the batch because I was like, I need to let this cool like to at least room temperature. And then I looked at it, you know, 10 minutes later, I was like, well, that looks set. And I poked it and it was like the consistency of warm jello. It just kind of like broke apart and was gelatinized. And I was like, maybe if I warm it back up and whisk it. No, damage was done. So this was crazy easy. I took half a watermelon and I put it in the BlendTec and juiced it and poured it into a pot.
Did it blend?
It did blend. It turned into juice, in fact. Even the seeds. It's a watermelon, so it doesn't have black seeds. There was one black seed in this whole, you know, personal watermelon. And it's this, so it's this method called spherification. I also learned that olive oil does freeze. Not solid, but it does freeze. So don't put that shit in your freezer. Just put it in your fridge for an hour. Because you will forget about it in the freezer. So anyhow, it was crazy simple once, like, I worked out a couple of the kinks, because I wasn't really working off of an exact recipe. I, like, kind of read a couple and I was like, oh, okay, I get this. I did not watch a YouTube video, follow it precisely. You take the juice, and it is a 10-to-1 ratio of gram weight agar-agar powder to this juice. You just give it a quick simmer to get it dissolved and just let it cool a little bit. And then you take a little eyedropper or anything that you can drip into this jar of cold oil. And these drops get chilled by the oil, and there's a little oil bubble created around it, and it creates this beautiful little sphere of fruit juice that then cools into like a jello, but like more like a boba, but not quite as firm, because boba bubbles, like, they freak me out and I hate them. Caviar is the best way to describe it. Me and the kids made it, and it was super fun. It was like a activity for them where they got to use their kitchen knives, because I have plastic kitchen knives for the kids, like plastic chef's knives, and chopping watermelon, and it goes in the blender. And then they're doing all the eyedropping, like, my fingers are tired. I'm like, bitch, you wanted to make this. This is not on me. Work harder. And they turned out really well. I sent pictures to you. They don't keep well, but they turned out really lovely. Had it on vanilla ice cream. You can do this with any kind of fruit juice. And it was a fun foray into molecular gastronomy that I will continue to do until I exhaust the smallest container of agar-agar powder that I could find, which was like half a pound. So I used 6 grams of my 8-ounce container.
I wonder if Harry Styles would consider rewriting that Watermelon Sugar song for Watermelon Caviar.
I you know, I'll hit him up. I'll slide into his DMs.
I've got another thing.
Do me.
So we've taken my family, I say we, my family, really my daughter and I, but my wife will also participate. Have taken to reading books that are going to be turned into movies.
Okay.
If we haven't yet read them, or sometimes even if we have, or if I have, I'll go back and read it again. But my daughter is like kind of dedicated to this idea that, yeah, I want to see that movie. I'm excited, but I really want to read the book first. So that is in some ways a challenging. It's challenging to do that, because you sort of set yourself up for some expectations that are going to be hard to meet, or you know, sometimes the two things just don't. Anyway, long story short, Project Hail Mary, Ryan Gosling, was announced, you know, quite a while ago.
I'm super sure I saw this movie.
And Betty had mentioned, you know, I want to read that, and then I want to go see it close to, you know, release date. I say, yeah, let's do it. I haven't read it. Andy Weir, I think, is just terrific, but I haven't read that. And so, yeah, let's do it. And so we did. And so we did. First, let me just say, that book is fantastic. The way Andy Weir writes is he writes with science. And in fact, my wife didn't like this book. She said, yeah, it's a little dense. My wife's take was it's a little dense. I disagreed. It's not dense at all. He just writes through sort of surface level scientific principles, right? And he's not diving deep into the science. However, the twists of his books, and this is true for The Martian, it's true for Artemis, his twists oftentimes focus on sort of scientific principles or anomalies. Anyway, I really, really enjoyed the book. I don't want to give too much away, but the characters are fantastic and you really fall in love with these characters. Went to see the movie and predictably pretty different, right? You cannot, in the context of a 2-ish hour movie, spend anywhere near as much time on science, right? Because it requires words and the dialogue. I mean, it just wouldn't work, right?
You have to assume it, right? Like you can depict what takes 5 pages to describe.
That's right.
Happens in a moment.
That's right. And so there are, anyway, long story short, they had to make some changes, right? They had to cut some stuff. They had to sacrifice some ideas. They had to sacrifice some events. But what I will say is, having finished that book and then within about 72 hours having gone to see the movie, I really, really enjoyed both of these. They're the same but different. There are things about both of them that I really liked. So my other thing for the week is both the book, Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir, and also the movie, Project Hail Mary with Ryan Gosling, produced by Andy Weir. I just had a really good time both reading this book and watching this movie. I just thought it's terrific. If you don't know anything about the story, I'm not going to necessarily recommend reading the book first. If you don't know the story and you're just like, yeah, I'll go see. You should see it because it's a really delightful story. And I wouldn't say you really have to read the book first. What I will say is I think they're both super well done, super enjoyable, really, really good. And that's true independent of one another. I don't think you need the book for the movie. I don't think you need the movie for the book. Would I have liked the movie more if I hadn't just read the book? Maybe. I don't know. I don't think so. Just really, really good stuff. So that's my other thing for the week is Project Hail Mary. I'm a fanboy. Like,
I need.
I've
to
considered
see
getting like shirts, like Project Hail Mary shirts, because I just love the story so much. I'm really enamored by the characters.
Why didn't you just wear your Ken shirt?
I don't know what that. Oh, like from Barbie?
Yeah.
You
already have a few Ryan Gosling. I do.
Yeah,
t-shirts.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. Well, you know, next time. Yeah, so Andrew says, you know, I swear I've seen this movie. I was like, it's
no,
actually
so
not possible.
I saw a trailer for it, and I was like, this can't just be coming out. It's possible, not even possible. What happened was I was certainly half asleep when I saw a trailer for it, and then my brain made a movie around the trailers. That's the only viable option for why I feel like I've seen this movie. Because I did some Googling. I was like, I feel like I've seen this before. And they're like, you're maybe conflating it with the Adam Sandler Spaceman movie. and that's what AI said. And I was like, nah,
I don't think
no,
so.
That's really different because that was a spider. no, what happened? I had to have like fallen asleep and been in like a half sleep state watching a trailer for it.
I will say I did really work very hard. You know, it's not like the olden days, right? Where if a movie came out, you were blasted with. I can, by and large, avoid commercials. I've got YouTube Premium.
Oh, see, we don't have any of the premium. So even our Netflix has ads.
I can, by and large, avoid any sort of commercials. And I specifically did. I didn't want to watch a trailer. Because I knew I was going to read. Like, I didn't want to have any poisoning of any pots.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad. I'm glad for that.
So
because everything was a surprise.
If you had to compare season 1 Game of Thrones with book 1 Game of Thrones in the way of a screen adaptation.
Mm.
Right? Which I think is probably one of the finest examples of a screen adaptation of a book.
Yeah, they did a great job with it.
And the rest of the seasons take what you will, but season 1 was, I think the best adaptation I've ever seen.
Yeah. I mean, they did a great job all the way. I mean, they did a great job for a lot of seasons.
So how does it line up in the way of an adaptation? Because a movie's different, right?
Yeah. Like, no, I mean,
you don't get 10 hours to tell the same story.
Yeah, very different. I mean, really.
How about The Martian, maybe?
I actually think they did it's a slightly different take, right? The Martian, I think, really relies on Matt Damon's charisma. To tell that story.
Because it's a one-man show, basically.
Yeah, that's right. And with Project Hail Mary, they did something a little different, which is to say the character, Ryland Grace, is not a particularly charismatic guy. And Ryan Gosling does a good job of not being overly charismatic. He's still Ryan Gosling. But he does a pretty good job of being a dick, right? Kind of being a self-absorbed jerk, and yet the dynamic between, again, I don't want to give any spoilers, the dynamic between him and the other characters is really good and compelling, and I thought it was just great. I really enjoyed it as a movie, as a film, which is to say it was different than the book, but I liked them both.
All right.
Yeah.
Good to know.
That's all I have to say about that.
That's all I got to say about that.
That's all. Anything you want to add?
No, I'm out of things.
Hey, folks, thanks for joining us for this episode of 40 and 20 of the Watch Clicker podcast. Do me a favor. You can go to our website. That's watchclicker.com. Sometimes we post things on that website. If you want to follow us on social media, you can do that at Watch Clicker or at 40and20_WatchClicker, both on Instagram. Sometimes we post things on those Instagrams. If you want to support us, and this is important, guys, because we really need you to support us, you can do that at patreon.com/40and20. That's how we get all the money to keep both the website and this podcast going. Patreon.com/40and20. And don't forget to tune back in next Tuesday for another hour of watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like.
Bye-bye.